You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the 10th voice. The views and opinions of this program are those of its hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nowling, and I'm here with my co-host, is Fiona Nowling. Behind the board today is our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. We are devoting the entire show today to a special guest and those who are supporting her. Joanna Ramsey is a transgender woman who experienced a harrowing time incarcerated in Kansas within the male prison population, and she is here to speak to us all about herself, what she went through in prison, and her transgender activism behind the wall. Along with her is Carolyn Gibbs, the founder of the Transgender Institute of Kansas City, who is going to talk about how she and they work to help Joanna and plans for a future project of outreach for transgender prisoners. Joanna is also joined by her friend Tyga McHenry, who will talk with us about Joanna's experience. Fiona will finish up the show with her community calendar update, but first, let's take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week. Hello, I'm Una Nowling, and this is the Transgender News of the Week. Earlier this month, the Department of Defense published its directive laying out the path for transgender military personnel to obtain a medical diagnosis, develop a transition plan and timeline with their doctor and their commander, and eventually begin living and serving as their preferred gender. The directive appears to be fairly progressive, with each transition plan being determined by the individual and their physicians, whether that includes psychotherapy, hormone therapy, surgery, or any other procedures. While there is no tracking system in place, it is estimated that about 2,400 transgender soldiers are currently serving in the military. In political news, Republicans are trying to push one last major anti-LGBT measure through Congress before the elections, this one being another so-called religious liberty provision, which would allow federal contractors to discriminate against women and LGBT Americans in hiring while receiving taxpayer dollars. The Obama administration had previously banned the practice by executive order, protecting the jobs of millions of LGBT workers across America. Some of you may recall this is the measure that was passed in the House of Representatives in an antic where Republicans openly violated their own voting rules, continuing to vote against an amendment to kill this measure after the official time for voting had expired. In a similar measure from the state of Fairness and Tolerance for All, Louisiana. Sorry, I couldn't really say that with a straight face. I need a moment. The state's conservative attorney general is refusing to follow an executive order from Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards, which would mandate that state contracts must protect LGBT workers, once again showing that the party of jobs is really the party of straight, cisgender, Christian jobs, like Chick-fil-A server or alligator wrestler. Cleveland native Brandi Bledsoe became the 23rd confirmed transgender person murdered this year, making 2016 the deadliest year on record for transgender persons in America. The 32-year-old woman died of a gunshot wound to the chest and was found dead after having been subjected to additional extreme trauma. Initial reports misgendered Bledsoe, but then members of her family came forward to say she was a transgender woman. Bledsoe was a Home Depot employee and an animation artist who reported to have a second lease on life and to be very happy after she finally was able to begin presenting as her authentic self. She is at least the fourth transgender woman killed in Cleveland since 2012. Police at this time have no reported motive nor any suspects. California has set up the nation's first large-scale transgender jobs program spearheaded by Michaela Mendelson, a transgender restaurant owner who has employed many other transgender persons in her El Pollo Loco franchises. Called the California Trans Work Project, the program encourages transgender employment in the restaurant and food service industry by paying for 50% of the first 120 hours of a transgender worker's training, as well as providing training resources for management and staff to ensure an atmosphere of respect and non-discrimination. The Florida LGBT community is sharply divided on a new effort by a gun manufacturer to promote concealed carry licensure among Orlando's LGBT community. Using the slogan, quote, "armed gays don't get bashed," unquote, gun maker Standard Manufacturing has provided the Orlando chapter of the Pink Pistols, a pro-self-defense LGBT organization, with a grant to pay for training, instruction materials, range fees, and ammunition. While many believe that trained and armed activists are a valuable line of defense for the United States LGBT community, especially with the increasingly fired up right-wing anti-LGBT political rhetoric, others believe that responding to the threat of violence with armed resistance simply perpetuates the overall conflict. In international news, a British bill called the Turing Law, after noted cryptanalyst and mathematician Alan Turing, who was a noted gay man in his time, which would have pardoned tens of thousands of men convicted of having same-sex relations, was blocked by a conservative filibuster. Conservatives instead said they supported a different version of the law, which only pardons those convicted of same-sex relations but who are no longer living, in effect sending a message that the only good gay man is a dead gay man. Keep it classy, conservatives. The president of Indonesia came out this week claiming that he opposes anti-LGBT discrimination, while at the same time saying that what he called, quote, the LGBT lifestyle, unquote, was not allowed in his country because Islam does not allow it. Meanwhile, Indonesian authorities are seeking to pass a bill making all same-sex relations illegal, and under another effort are seeking to ban all websites that promote LGBT causes. Earlier this year, the government even closed a school specifically intended to help transgender Muslims. As if this isn't bad enough, I discovered just 1 week ago when I was researching a potential work trip to the capital city of Jakarta that under the law, any transgender person found on the streets after sunset is considered automatically to be a sex worker and subject to imprisonment and fines of, get this, $612,500. Apparently, the president is one of the greatest psychic mediums of our time, as he seems to be actively channeling the logic of Donald Trump in his so-called support of LGBT persons. Finally, many of us know that the remake of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, starring transgender actress Laverne Cox, premiered last Thursday to somewhat disappointing ratings. They came to be about 60% less than last year's Grease Live the Musical, which was aired at the same time. LGBT news and cultural sites such as The Advocate and mainstream sites such as The New York Times have panned the program. Meta review sites Metacritic and Rotten Tomatoes gave it ratings of 58% and 30% respectively. The show also engendered controversy in the transgender community between older members who had fond memories of the prior campy classic and younger members who questioned why a transgender woman agreed to play the role of a male crossdresser. History will be the judge of this show, but there's something that I can be the judge of right here and now. My friends Callista and Elle pointed out that earlier this year, Richard O'Brien, the creator and a star of the original Rocky Horror Picture Show, he was the character Riff Raff, said he agreed with both transphobic feminist Jermaine Greer and washed-up drag queen Dame Edna, also known as Barry Humphreys. O'Brien specifically agreed with Greer when Greer said, and I've edited this for the radio, quote, "just because you lop off your junk and then wear a dress doesn't make you an effing woman," unquote. Whereas Humphreys is notorious for stating that transgender surgery was nothing more than attention-seeking self-mutilation. Well, Mr. O'Brien, you are a prime example of the fact that just because someone has a brain doesn't mean they're intelligent, just because they have a heart doesn't mean that they have compassion, and just because they have a mouth doesn't mean that they should ever open it. Your opinions are vile, and I've seen things that understand transgender issues better than you running around barnyards with their heads chopped off. I'd say that you are just a doddering old ignoramus, but that would be an insult. insult to the ignoramuses of the world. The fact that you have previously claimed to be transgender yourself while saying these things is disrespectful to every transgender person on this planet, as well as any and all planets in this whole universe. Even the transgender slime molds inhabiting SETI Alpha 7 are shaking their heads in pity at you right now, Mr. O'Brien.
Love, slime molds don't have heads.
I was on a roll. And this is my thing. I'm Una Nowling, and that was the transgender news of the week. When I was a young engineer and loaded down with mandatory overtime to make project deadlines, I sometimes had to work nearly 80-hour weeks, and on one occasion worked for more than 36 straight hours without sleep. While a bunch of us were standing around one day commiserating and feeling miserable, a joker in the group said, "Just imagine this. You could be doing exactly what you're doing right now, but with no arms and no legs." And along those lines, transition is an incredibly difficult process, one that would floor anyone that it was suddenly dumped upon. And many of my listeners out there know exactly what I am talking about and are living that right now as I speak. So imagine that you had to go through everything you've had to go through in transition, but in prison, where your freedom to move, freedom of information to help you with your transition, freedom to speak, or freedom to even exist is severely limited and entirely in the hands of others and out of your control. Our special guest today has had exactly that experience. Joanna Ramsey started her transition while in prison in Kansas, and she is here to talk about that experience with us. She is joined by Carolyn Gibbs, the founder of the Transgender Institute of Kansas City, and the person who worked with Joanna to help her be freer in spirit, if not in physicality. Also with us in the studio is a friend of Joanna's, Tyga McHenry. Welcome, everyone, to Trans Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
There's so much that we want to talk about with you, Joanna, but first I was wondering if you could tell our audience a little bit about where you grew up in Kansas and a little bit about your early life.
Sure. So I grew up in Hutchinson, Kansas, you know, big city living, and I grew up in a kind of conservative household. My parents, they were always really supportive of everything that I did, but they didn't really quite get me. I was always kind of the oddball in my family, and so I kind of struggled with that. I never really identified as guy mode or identified male. I always knew, there was always a part of me that knew that I was a girl, and people just tended to disagree with me, so it was kind of disturbing. In high school, just because of this conservative town that I lived in, I started to become involved in the church. And that was a really difficult transition for me personally, because I ended up becoming involved in a very conservative Pentecostal church. And so there were really strict gender guidelines as far as how to behave, how to present. And it was a really difficult time for me. When I started going to college, I actually met a friend. And she was the first person in my life. And she came up to me and she says, "Oh, you do not belong in this town. You have got to get out now and run." And so I kind of took her advice, and I was planning on leaving Hutchinson, but then, you know, incarceration happened. And so I did leave Hutch. And that's a little bit about my background. I met my friend Tyga, who's with us today, and she has been an amazing friend and has really kind of held it down, which is some prison slang for you. She wrote it out, wrote out the time with me. So, you know, she's a great person.
Now, you told me when we talked before that when you were in court for sentencing, you appeared in a dress because you had transitioned socially. And you think that that might have influenced the judge to throw out a plea agreement, which is highly unusual for a judge. Do you think your gender presentation was partially the cause?
I personally feel like it played a factor into it. I know that for my arraignment is when I had on a dress. For my actual sentencing is when I was on oranges because I was in county jail at the time. And so I just know that it was a definite confusion moment for that judge. And I think he kind of hardened his senses towards me in that respect.
So you said you had been presenting socially female since for some time. When did that start?
Growing up, I didn't have a word for transgender. I didn't know what transgender was. I just knew that I just always felt like a lady. So I would, I had transitioned socially, I say, because I started to, you know, dress in women's clothing and wear makeup, and I went to cosmetology school. How much more campy can you be? But, you know, I was pretty successful in that. And so I think we all go through a campy phase. So maybe my hair was a little crazy for a while and fire engine red. And Tyga can attest to that. But, you know, I think we all go through that small phase. And but now I've kind of come into my own sense of style, and, you know, it works.
So I want to skip ahead to something that I know is rather painful for you. And, you know, as we talk through your time incarcerated, obviously you have to say what you feel comfortable saying. But you, what you told me, your first day incarceration must have really been terrifying and demoralizing to you to be in that situation.
So when you become a ward of the state or you're incarcerated, there's actually two processes. The first thing that you do is you go to an RDU, which is where they classify your housing level and they put you in a specific facility. And so I was housed in as high medium. It goes off of a point system. I think I had 14 or 15 points, which put me at high medium. And so I went to Hutch Max. And there are two large prisons in Kansas. They're like the gangsta prisons. And that's Hutch Max and Lansing Max. And Max prison is much different from medium or minimum. So maximum prison is actually high, medium, and max. And when you're in that, your restriction or your movement is much greater restricted than in medium or minimum. So my first day out of RDU and in Max prison, another inmate came up to me and he said, "Well, you know, when you come to prison, you have to have a job. And so you don't want to have a job working in the kitchen. Trust me, it's a terrible job. So I would love to have you come on and be a porter," which is just someone who goes and cleans and does sanitation. So I said, "Sure, that sounded great." I was very naive at the time. Just, I had always been kind of naive growing up. And he just seemed really interested in me. And it was my very first day, and I was very scared, and I didn't know what to do. And I've never been the person who has an easy time saying no to anything. So they popped my cell door, and I went to go help him clean. And so he took me back to the shower room, and he abused me in that situation my very first day. And so that was a real wake-up call to how I needed to carry myself. I'd always been a quiet and a more shy person before incarceration, but that's just a way to get yourself victimized. Now, of course, the facility has safeguards in place for things like that to happen if you go and report it. But I was always afraid of the segregation that's involved in that, and I didn't know if I could mentally handle being isolated for 23 out of 24 hours a day. And so I just decided that I would do whatever I needed to do to A, remain safe, and B, stay out of segregation. So I made some tough decisions. Sometimes you have to decide between being someone's girlfriend or being someone's victim. So I made the tough decision, but I don't shame myself for it.
And there was always the fear, too, of retribution as a result of making a complaint, correct?
There is. It's at the time, I was incarcerated in 2009. And so at the time, gender dysphoria wasn't, I don't think, a term. It was gender identity disorder, and it wasn't something that was discussed. I had started actually trying to get online medication, online, you know, illegally from Canada. And so when I went to the doctors, they just said, "Oh, well, if you haven't been diagnosed and you don't have an actual prescription, there's just nothing we can do for you." And I was just really intimidated by the system. And so I was afraid to speak up for myself at that time. So I just let it go. And I just suffered. And I also, when I came into prison, I was 21. And I looked about 19, 18. I looked very young. And that's also another pitfall for being a victim in prison, is looking so young. So I really had to put in safeguards. And, you know, there's just like a whole culture. It really is a city within a city, and there's whole cultures and subsects of cultures that you have to learn how to flow and intermingle with, because if you don't, then you just have the opportunity to be taken advantage of.
Were there other prisoners that you encountered that you were pretty sure of or that you knew were probably transgender?
I have a hard time answering that question because there's this prison queen mentality that you have to pick up. And part of that is a very drag queen-esque mentality where you're super over the top loud, super over the top boisterous. And I had to learn how to adopt that and pick it up. And so did a lot of the other girls there. Now, can I say there were definitely gender variant people? Absolutely. But there were very few people who demanded that they use feminine pronouns or who demanded a level of respect as a woman or who really stood on it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And you said that while you were in maximum prison, you felt the most fear because there were a lot of folks there who had nothing to lose.
Yes. So maximum security prison, that's where they house all the inmates who have life without the possibility of parole, a hard 40, a hard 30. So there were so many people there. I had someone tell me one time with a shiv that I was nothing more than 3 months in the hole. And so when you hear that and you realize how little value that your life has to another human being, it just puts you in a position to where you'll pretty much do what they ask you to do.
And 3 months in the hole is solitary confinement, segregation, like you said?
Yeah. It probably would have been a lot more than 3 months now that I know the system, but still.
But a lot of people would just cavalierly say, I could take that or it would be better, but it's not at all like that, is it?
No. And it's when you don't fit into that heteronormative, tough guy, super macho personality, then you really have to learn how to be internally and externally strong. Because if you don't fit into that mold, then those are the people who get taken advantage of, whether it be with your canteen, with your money, whether it be with your body, whether it be with your mind. And so you have to learn how to toughen up and you have to adapt. You have to change part of who you are. And I definitely can say that I am changed from being incarcerated, some for the better. I'm a stronger person, but some for the worse. I have a lot of anxiety now, a lot of fear that I never had had before, and a lot of uncomfortability, if that's a word, around men.
Absolutely. Now, you told us when we talked with you earlier that at first you really didn't know what the word even transgender meant. It was something that you had not really been exposed to. You weren't really certain, you know, about this definition. And then one day you came across a magazine that helped you understand a little bit more about it.
Yes. So I was sitting, and this is by this time I had gotten to minimum security prison, which is a much better environment, much safer. And I was sitting there and someone came up to me and they said, I think this is about you. And so they hand me this Time magazine article and it had Laverne Cox on the cover of it. And it was the transgender tipping point. And I literally sat there and in an hour and a half absorbed every word of that article. And I said, these are definitions that I didn't have before. This is power for me. This is knowledge. And with this knowledge, what can I do to better my situation? And that's when I said, now's the time. This is when I stand up. This is when I make an issue. This is when I start fighting for myself. And that was the beginning of empowering myself with knowledge. I had to self-educate. It was really difficult to learn the lexicon of being transgender because there are so many terms and it's a little confusing and it's hard. There's so much political correctness. But I really wanted to be able to use these terms and sound more educated on the situation than administration was. Because if you can be, the more education you have, the more knowledge is power, and it's just the truth. And so the more educated I was, the more they kind of respected that.
And one thing that I think folks that have never even contemplated going to prison don't really realize is that you don't have access to resources in there. You can't just take out your iPhone and Google for what is transgender. You don't even have a fully, you can't get regular magazine subscriptions. You can't just go to your library and, you know, look things up, right?
No, there is absolutely no internet access whatsoever. It's completely prohibitive unless you have a minimum wage job in minimum security prisons, but those are, they're not super rare, but they're hard to get. And you definitely don't get one if you're gender variant, I'll tell you that. Those are for, they're just like any other kind of job. They're all manufacturing jobs, and I'm sure that some of the ladies out here would know that a lot of the times those jobs won't hire transgender women because it's a men's environment, and you know, a lot of times I find that I make men uncomfortable. Not so much anymore, though. It's so strange to be outside and not have everyone just immediately clock me as being transgender. And I don't know. That's another thing, I guess.
I understand completely. And one thing, I just have to bring this up because it made me feel good. You told us that at some point you were able to start getting radio access or listen to the radio.
Listen, one thing that was a lifeblood to me was Trans Talk. So I started listening, I want to say, a few years ago. Sandra Mead was the host at the time, and I was just flipping through the radio because we have MP3 players. They're about a pound and a half because they're full of batteries, but that was like a new thing that they started to come out with, and they had a radio on it, so I would walk the track and just flip through channels, and all of a sudden, I heard, I don't remember what it was, I think I heard the word estrogen, and I said, interesting, so I'll listen to this, and it was Sandra Mead, and she was talking to, I don't even remember now, and then I realized what this show was, and I said, oh my God, they have a Trans Talk somewhere? So then I became a regular listener every single Saturday, and I started writing letters aggressively to like every single organization that I could come across, that I could find. That's how I learned about Caroline Gibbs, is that she was on Trans Talk, and she was on the news station, and so I got her information, and I want to say, during my incarceration, which was 8 years, that I probably have written over 200 letters if you add everything together, but probably at least 60 letters to different organizations that helped LGBT causes. And of all of those places that I've written, only a few of them ever wrote me back, and only one stood beside me, and that was the Transgender Institute. And I would definitely say that Caroline has been an angel in my life that has helped me out so much, because just having that kind of transparency and having someone behind you, I think, really motivated administration to be more to be warmer to the subject, because there was another entity that was looking into my situation that was interested. Caroline gave me her personal information so that I could contact her anytime, and it was just amazing. It was amazing to have that outlet, to have someone tell me, and she would give me books, lists, books I could order, and so I read, Janet Mock's book, which is amazing. It was a life-changing book. I understand some of her experiences, so I could relate to her in a lot of ways, and so it was great.
I think you said you also ate up Jennifer Finney Boylan's book as well.
I did. I read that. I liked how funny she was. She's so... she has, I think that her humor is similar to yours. It's very, I don't want to say campy, but it's just, it's like in your face. I like it. It's a lot of shade. I love shade.
I have campy humor.
You have shady humor because you throw a lot of shade in there. I like it.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I am recording that
soundbite
for the show.
We're going to have to take a short break here for to listen to some music. And when we come back, I want to continue on this vein and ask Caroline a little bit about their first encounter with you and about the process of working with you to help you fully realize the start of your transition.
Welcome back to Trans Talk. You are listening to What is Gold by Mouths of Babes, and a group that is a lesbian couple, and they wrote that song when one of their friends was transitioning and was afraid that they would lose parts of themselves in the process, and they said, what is gold will stay, all the good parts will stay with you. So welcome back. We are going to talk to Caroline Gibbs now about her work with Joanna Ramsey, who's in the studio with her friend Tiga. And Caroline, Tell us how you got involved with Joanna and how you were to help with the prison system.
First of all, Fiona, I want to say that this woman is so inspiring. I can honestly say to everybody out there that there wasn't a dry eye around this table when she was talking, because she is a survivor. She is a major survivor and a trans woman incarcerated for almost a decade, and she made it. And here she is, and I can tell her her future. She's going to be such an advocate for this cause as to just knock everybody else out of the park. So, it first started our relationship. I believe the warden called me from Lansing. I believe that was the very first contact. And it was either the arts person or the warden. And I believe it was the warden. Anyway, she contacted me.
Deputy warden.
The deputy warden, yes. And she contacted me and she said, we know about you all. We've done our research. And we have a woman who is what we believe to be transgender. Can you help us? Will you be in touch with her? Will you encourage her and assist her? So I understood right away that this person was special because she had beautiful connections already. The deputy warden was already on her side inside the prison. So she called me, and of course there's this whole process when they call you from inside the prison where you have to agree to take the phone call, and there are certain steps you have to go through in order to make sure that you are willing and it's all okay for everybody involved. So I took those steps with my friend Joanna. Oh, I would say many times we talked on the phone, and we talked about estrogen, and we talked about spironolactone, which is the anti-androgen, and we talked about the nitty-gritty of transition. She is, once again, an extraordinary woman because she's a fighter. She never gave up fighting for herself as a trans woman. She never let that go. And I would say that rather than my inspiring her, she inspired me, and she continues to inspire me.
I understand that you got basically more than a year of remote therapy sessions pro bono from the Transgender Institute.
Yeah, that's, I'm getting kind of emotional. That was so nice. I was just so worried about continuing medical treatment, and Caroline immediately said that she would work with me on therapy. And then when I wasn't able to go to see an endocrinologist because I'm not on a really good hormone regimen at this point, she got on the phone personally and made phone calls and got a hold of people, got in touch with other people. I had some anxiety problems, and so she was really concerned about that and got a hold of people. I just don't know where I would be medically, physically, if she hadn't been willing to stand in and really help me. So it's been amazing. What a friend. What a friend.
I would like to say that the Transgender Institute, for a long time, has wanted this to be part of our mission. We have wanted to work with people who were incarcerated. And so this kind of fell in my lap. I'd already been thinking about it and wanting to help. And so Joanna literally fell in my lap. And
I ran into her lap. I was trying so hard to find someone. I ran.
That sounds like last weekend at Missy B's with me.
The truth comes out on Trans Talk. Wonderful. So I just would like everybody to understand that the Transgender Institute really is behind this woman. And furthermore, now the Topeka Women's Prison has contacted us. And there is a female-to-male person living in the all-women's prison in Topeka. And they went through the exact same process where the warden there contacted me, the then warden there contacted me and said, we have a trans man on board, and actually used the term mister, which shocked me, but so be it. It was great. And so we're going to be working with this fellow, and we've already arranged to do telemedicine so that he can get his hormones. So we are living through our mission. Our goal is to, let me just interject, we have a new center opening in Dallas, and we plan to do exactly the same outreach into the prisons in Texas, which sorely need it, as everybody at this table understands and everybody in the audience understands. So maybe more than most other states, except I think you mentioned Louisiana.
Yes. Yes. Are you going to be doing work, or have you been approached by prisons in Missouri as well?
We haven't yet. No, we haven't. We've been kind of tentatively approached by Leavenworth, but no prisons in Missouri yet.
Well, one could say Kansas might need the most help. But.
Missouri actually has a program specifically for – I had to educate myself on other states too. So Missouri actually has a program specifically designed for the treatment of transgender individuals. And so it's kind of, they already have like a set processes in place for that, whereas Kansas had never really dealt with the issue beforehand.
Mm.
And you were the first person, Joanna, who had medical treatment in Kansas, if I'm
yes,
not mistaken.
Yes, I am. There's some disputing over that. I'm the first person to make the issue, and then another soldier was marching on right beside me in a different facility. And I actually had some other physiological issues to where I wasn't able to start hormone replacement therapy as quickly as I would like to. From the time that I was diagnosed with gender dysphoria, it took 9 months to actually begin hormone replacement therapy. So technically, another lady scooted on in and got her estrogen right before me, but I definitely pioneered the cause.
It's like sort of like the finish of the estrogen Olympics.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't much at the finish line, but there was a little bit of estrogen.
But she's going to be getting lots more estrogen coming up here. We already talked. It's KU Med. They're our partner. And that's why we were able to work so closely with them to get Joanna taken care of.
Yes, and we've talked with Dr. Marsh from there on the show before, and Joanna actually heard the show and it was able to help her with taking her meds.
Yes, so they don't really know a lot about these specific medications, and aldactone is a diuretic, and so they had me taking it at night at about 8:30 p.m. and so then I'd be up all night. And so then I heard this message from Courtney Marsh, and she said, oh, you should take those in the morning every time. And I was like, you are a lifesaver, because I can get a night's sleep now.
So trans talk helped you stop peeing all night
long. All night long.
Is the word you said okay on radio?
Well, it has to be, I guess.
Linda didn't mute us, so I think we're okay.
No. Context matters, apparently. I understand you tried repeatedly to get female canteen items, such as a woman's sports bra and cosmetics, things that would normally be allowed for female inmates, and you had a bit of a trial getting access.
Yeah, that was the... There was one battle that I lost, and that was the battle of pronouns. But so that was my only one fail. But as far as feminine canteen items, I felt like I should have access to the exact same items that the women in Topeka got. And I wasn't asking for all kinds of things that they weren't getting. So I found this thing, this lucky little thing called like the WPATH Standards of Care, which is a federal guidelines that institutes the care of transgender, transsexual, and gender nonconforming peoples. So I really read through that. And it had all kinds of interesting things. So I started requesting those. I sent every member of administration all the way up to the governor, although Brownback never wrote me back.
Oh.
Yeah, he missed out.
Big meanie.
But I sent them all that information and specifically asked for each of the items that was outlined in that. And then I found, got a hold of the women's canteen item list, and I started systematically asking for those items as well. So at first they said, absolutely not. This is ridiculous. And I said, well, if I'm on estrogen, then I'm going to need the support of a bra. And so the deputy warden of programs, who's over healthcare, said, well, I can definitely understand that. We'll agree to the bra, but no more. So I eventually got a sports bra, which, by the way, I feel sorry for all the ladies at Topeka because they're terrible. Terrible. But so I said, well, this is really not good enough for me. So each time that they would give me one item, then I would start systematically asking for more things. I figured once I got one thing at a time, you just kind of got to chip away at the iceberg. And so then, but this, something that's interesting is the same week that I got my bras in, I actually lost a job because I made my employer uncomfortable. And so I, you know, caused an issue with that. And I really started to get irritated by some of the unfairness of things. And administration was great about listening to what I had to say and trying to facilitate answers to my questions. At first, they weren't, but then they really kind of got on board. So I ended up, by about 5 days before releasing, having full access to all feminine cosmetic items. But before then, for about 8 months, I had my hands on foundation, powder and liquid foundation. And, you know, for any of you trans women that have beard growth, I have beard growth, and it's something that causes me severe stress. And being able to hide that and kind of wear that shield that makeup sometimes can be, you know, made a big difference for me personally. It began, you know, as my body began to change, it began to get a little bit uncomfortable for myself and for my peer offenders. And so there was just some steps that needed to be taken that maybe weren't. But I definitely pushed for everything that I could.
And now we're going to take a short break for a station announcement and then return to Trans Talk.
KKFI would like to take time out of our busy schedule to thank Jana and Pete Lindy, the wonderful people of Meshuga Bagels at 1208 West 39th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you, Meshuga, for keeping all volunteers fed and happy during our 2016 Fall Pledge Drive.
I feel that Matthew's death was our responsibility as well as the church's. Today, we're exploring what happens when devoutly held religious beliefs conflict with modern medicine.
It's not the child's choice to not get antibiotics or to not get insulin for diabetes. That's not that child's choice.
I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right before The Jazz Disciple.
Hello and welcome back to Trans Talk. We are continuing talking with Joanna Ramsey, Carolyn Gibbs, and also Tyga McHenry, her friend who is here in the studio with her. I wanted to ask Tyga to come up to the microphone and talk a little bit about, you know, how she met Joanna and about, you know, their friendship.
Met Joanna about nearly 10 years ago now. That's very humbling. And But we met in Hutchinson through a former friend of mine. I went down to go see her, and basically a friend through a friend, and just kind of hearing about her experience and the times I would go visit her in Hutch, she seemed like a really sweet person that I wanted to be around. And when I heard about what had happened throughout her, you know, before she even got incarcerated, you know, I was just very sympathetic and wanted to help her any way I can. And you know, was tried to be there as many times as possible. I was there for the sentencing, and I've just been basically her leech ever since, and followed her around to whatever, you know, prison she, because you do get transferred. You don't, needless to say, stay in one prison. And I think throughout the 8 years she was in there, she was in four prisons, and so just take a little weekend out of my time and just to go see her. And so it's a little easier now, I would have to say, to go see her, which is a delight for me. So
I'm really glad that you could be here to support her. Thank you.
And I'm really glad that she had a friend like that while she was inside.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's something I would want done for me. I know I had friends that were like, you know, you seem to be doing the most for someone that you've seen barely knew. And I was just like, you know, she's such a sweet person. And, you know, it's not so much, I know she would do the same for me, but I would just, I guess I'm just sympathetic like that. I would want someone to do that for me. And I know it was very isolating to be in prison, and I've had family members that were in prison. And so I know a little bit about that experience as well. And I just wanted to be involved and help her as much as possible.
That is absolutely wonderful, because we all need a lot of support and a lot of friendship. And a transgender woman who is trying to, you know, re-enter society in general and also with a record is going to be facing an incredible amount of challenges, things I can't even comprehend. And I've been at this business since before Joanna was born in some ways. Joanna, I want to talk a little bit about your craft. I understand when you were transferred to a lower security facility, you started working on crochet items, and then one day a lady came to the prison and asked you about your items. And I've seen some of your work. I know Carolyn has lamb chop in her office.
So as a child, my mother crocheted, and she was great at it. She taught me all the basic stitching, but she didn't really know how to read patterns. And when you know, when you're in prison, it's kind of boring. So I picked up the habit, and I taught myself how to read patterns, and then that got boring, so then I taught myself how to make patterns. So I was walking during a Christmas time, and the at the time administrator for the East Hill where I was at stopped me, and she said, "What is that?" And, you know, when any kind of, like, officer or administrator stops you, my immediate response is, "Nothing. Nothing. I have nothing." And so, you know, she was like, "Calm down, girl. I just want to see what you're working with." So, you know, I showed her, and she was like, "Would you be willing to maybe make some of those and donate to, I can't remember what it was now, not Catholic Charities. I ended up doing some for Catholic Charities, but different various organizations." And so I said, "Sure, I would love to." And so I ended up making like 47 things that first year. And she purchased the yarn herself, which was awesome. And so then she offered me a job to work for her. And then she ended up getting promoted. And she was my biggest ally. She's now the warden of Topeka Correctional Facility. But I probably, while incarcerated, made over 400 stuffed animals for different various charity organizations.
I thought that was an incredible part of your story, that your crochet led to a connection that assisted you with your transition.
Yeah, it was just one of those happy happenstances.
It also sounds like a karma thing, because you were doing it for charity and helping other people, and that ended up helping you.
Yeah, it was also stressful. There's a lot. They would call me like 3 days before they needed five or six things, and that's a lot of time to crochet something. My stuffed animals take 15 hours to make easily. So,
wow. So I understand that you know, having been released, as I said, you know, a couple minutes ago, you're facing some tremendous challenges. It's difficult enough to find a job and be hired and make it just being everyday average transgender, but to also have to face all of this with a record that employers are going to look at and people are going to judge you, you know, unfairly over, is you've had some challenges since you were released.
Oh, yeah. Finding employment is rough. I was so blessed because Tyga helped me out with a vehicle, and that put me so much, that propelled me forward so much. I wouldn't have been able to be as far as I am now. I got a job 2 weeks out. I think people were just shocked, because I think a lot of people really struggle to find work, but one of Tyga's friends helped me find this job. And something that was really neat is they're very supportive of me. And originally, like whenever I'd have to print out a receipt, it would say my dead name on it. And that was stressful to me because I started to kind of get some of that, like, I experienced like people not knowing that I was transgender, and I kind of enjoyed that for once in my life. And so they immediately agreed to change that throughout their system. So they, as quickly as possible, so now it all says Joanna. When I clock in, it says Joanna. They were just great about working with it. Another struggle, I think, was just that I have some anxiety problems that I'm working through, and the fear of the unknown, and just kind of waiting for that ball to drop, in a sense, makes me nervous. And I've had some trauma while in prison, and some of that has stuck with me.
Now, I want to throw this over to Caroline a bit. There's going to be a little bit of a benefit for Joanna that's going to be coming up. I believe it's coming up on the 15th at Village Presbyterian Church. And, you know, what's going to happen at that event?
We think it's going to be really exciting. There's going to be an auction, a silent auction. We're going to have
tables with many of the people who work with the Transgender Institute. So women who come will be able to get their makeup done, get their hair blown out, get their styling looked at, their clothes styling looked at. They'll be able to do a little vocal feminization practice. So many options will be at this event that will be fun. There will be goodies. I've heard through the grapevine that there may be some wine. but, of course, soft drinks for the kids. Kids are welcome, obviously. And we are very, very excited about this, about the wonderful location, first off, and that it's going to benefit our dear friend here.
And it could be a good opportunity for folks to come and meet the star of our show today person.
And then I did want to mention that Arts in Prison, while I was incarcerated, yes, there were two organizations that really stood behind me. And Arts in Prison is one of the few places that offered an inclusive environment for me to be able to be myself and to represent myself. And they've also, they're helping to host. And they're helping to sponsor this. I think they're going to be running the silent auction. And so my dear friend Lee is going to be running around. I worked with her at a gala, so I know how she runs around. She'll be running around the night, keeping things to a timetable. And also Beauty for Ashes, which is a Christian organization, they also have been very supportive of me, and I think they'll be represented there as well.
Well, we don't have much time left, so quickly, what time on the 15th is the fundraiser?
It'll be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Perfect.
And that'll be at the Village Presbyterian Church, which presumably is
in
the
Prairie Village.
I don't know where that is, but it's a place I've heard.
Google. Yes.
Yes. That Google Maps lady, I could go on about her.
Maybe on another show. Well, I'd like to thank you all very much for coming in. Caroline, Joanna, Antigua, thank you very much for being with us today. And now, I'm Fiona Nalling with the Kansas City Community Calendar. Every month, I lead the Kansas City Sofa Group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons. We will meet on the first and third Wednesday of this month at Leawood Pioneer Library, on November 2nd at 6:30 in Study Room 116, and on the 16th at 6:30 in Study Room 115. For driving directions and other sofa information, you can visit transitcity.org/sofa, and that's with two Fs. On Sunday, 30th of October, our own Una Nowling, who's sitting right beside me, is giving a talk on employment at the Transgender Institute, where she is the Director of Transgender Studies. That's at 3 p.m. at 8080 Wood Parkway, Kansas City, Missouri. Every Thursday, the Transfinity KC Chorus will be meeting for rehearsal for their Christmas concert at 7 p.m. at Country Club Congregational United Church of Christ. That's at 205 West 65th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, and all are welcome. And remember that the election day is November 8th, but many places have early voting, which might be easier to vote if you have to vote with the wrong gender identity and you're uncomfortable. More information about preparing to vote and how to deal with possible issues can be found at http://www.transequality.org/issues/resources/voting-while-trans-preparing-voter-ID-laws. And that's a horrible URL, so we are going to post things out to our Facebook page later. UMKC Trans Plus Allies is an inclusive monthly social support group and facility discussion on gender identity. They're meeting the first Wednesday of the month, and it will be a panel of gender binary transgender people, and it will be in the Student Union, room 402, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and there will be pizza. The 2016 Pride Lecture is on Thursday, November 3rd at 6 p.m. in the Pearson Auditorium, and Janaya Khan, International Ambassador for Black Lives Matter, will be speaking. For more information, go to the UMKC LGBTQIA page on Facebook. A transgender support group organized by Dr. Hishan Soni will run the first and third Saturday of the month from 1 to 2:30 p.m. It's open to all transgender persons, allies, and family members, and that's at 901 Kentucky Avenue, Suite 303, Lawrence, Kansas. Transgender Day of Remembrance is on 20th of November and will be held at 6:30 p.m. at the J.C. Nichols Fountain on the Plaza. For more details, there is a Facebook event, and the link is horrible, so I have actually shared it on the SOFA KC Facebook page, which will be at www.facebook.com/SOFA.KC. Passages LGBTQ Youth Centre meets at Trinity United Methodist Church every Wednesday from 5:30 to 9 p.m. for ages 14 to 20. It's a long-running Kansas City Youth Centre dedicated to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning youth and straight allies. And they meet at 620 East Armour Boulevard, Kansas City, Missouri. And Hear Me Out Toastmasters will be meeting at 6 p.m. at the Light Me Lighthouse on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. Hear Me Out Toastmasters is an LGBT enthused group which meets to practice public speaking and leadership skills. Every third Thursday at the Lighthouse, the Equal Trans Support Group meets as well at 5 p.m. and the November meeting will be the 17th. That's just a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street, Kansas City, Missouri. I'm Fiona Nalling, and that's the community calendar for the upcoming month.
Thank you all very much for tuning in to Trans Talk, this week's edition of the 10th Voice. Many thanks to our special guests that we had in the studio today, Joanna Ramsey, Carolyn Gibbs, Tyga McHenry, our sound engineer and producer, who is not a guest but very special, Linda Wilson, and last but not least, my co-host, Fiona Nowling. Remember that you can always send an email to us with your thoughts and suggestions to the10thvoice, all one word, at gmail.com. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart, Amy Bell, and Ebony Johnson. And be sure to join the 10th Voice next weekend as well, Saturday at 1 p.m., for more discussion of LGBT topics which shape our lives and our world. We will actually be talking about lesbian vampires next week. And no, I am not joking, and I will be on that episode, of course. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.